blood and thunder and going in for tackles that you wouldn't normally go in for.
I try and like want to go in, like my wife's English, the kids are having, but I just can't.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
We're going to talk about the Italian performance right now. I'm delighted to say James Horncastle is with us. James, good morning to you. How are you?
Very good, guys. How are you?
Yeah, so, well, pretty excited by the quality of football we're watching from this Italian side. Even their second string team are devastating and seem to be very much playing as a unit. It's remarkable stuff we've seen from them so far.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Mancini has been saying is that, you know, I don't have 11 first-team players, I've got 26. And you know, you mentioned the eight changes that you made for the starting lineup against Wales. Well, by the end of the game, with all the substitutions he'd made, he'd actually used 25 of the 26 guys, even his reserve goalkeeper, which I think if you were Welsh and you saw Salvatore Sirigu coming on for Gigi Donnarumma in the final 5 or 10 minutes, you were wondering what you were participating in. And look, I mean, they were already qualified, but if the result didn't go their way yesterday, Wales had the chance to win the group. They got the job done. I think what was really encouraging, and you know, when speaking to people on Mancini's staff before the tournament, they were worried that Marco Verratti was going to be a big miss for the first few games of the season for the tournament. It turned out that Manuel Locatelli more than deputised for him in those first two games, but when Verratti came back for the Wales game, you know, it was like he'd never been away. And I think, again, that just builds confidence for the team. And you know, while the knock on them so far is, OK, in this 31-game unbeaten run, who have they played? You know, the Netherlands, Portugal, Poland, all of whom I think are really good teams. You know, they're really confident that with this style of football, with this team spirit, they can go all the way.
It does seem, obviously, this is like some sort of, goodbye between Italian fans and the Italian team as they go on their travels now and try and win this thing out. And there was this unbelievable reception, by all accounts, when Mancini's name gets read out and when Mancini comes up on screen and when anything Roberto Mancini appears in this Italian scenario. Just how loved by Italian fans is this man right now?
Well, you've got to remember the circumstances in which he got the job, which was 2018, one of the lowest moments in Italian football history. First time they've missed out on qualifying for the World Cup in 60 years. They were humiliated, really. And he came in. I think he needed them as much as they needed him as well, because, you know, really after doing such a great job at City, you know, he's drifted really from Galatasaray to St. Petersburg. And, you know, he's instead of downplaying the national team, which some of his predecessors have done, he's really talked them up. He said, look, we've won the World Cup 4 times. We've been to European Championship finals. You know, we're a great football nation. Let's get back to doing that. And I think the style of football with which, you know, I mean, he's really built his team around Jorginho, Verratti and Barella and Insigne, players that were available to his predecessors, quality players with skill, but who, yeah, didn't really fit into other people's systems. And he's built the team around them. He said, look, I'm not going to impose my system on you. I want to get as much quality in this team as possible. And they've played the style of football, which has made, you know, Italians stand up and be entertained. And I think that, combined with, you know, what we've all been through in the last 18 months, but, you know, I mean, Italy was really, I think, the first European epicentre of the pandemic. I think there's this desire to just see, watching it and communing something together. And Mancini's bringing along the entire nation. He's really talking the team up as being in a sort of an agency of positivity. And it's working. It's working. I mean, it's even if you're not Italian, it's hard not to watch this team and have a smile kind of grow across your face.
So that's kind of it then, really, like the sense that maybe that Italy were being held back, that the happiness was being bottled up over the last few years, even pre-pandemic. Was there that sense, James?
Well, I think the other thing is Italy usually go into major tournaments with in a really tense atmosphere, either because that's just how they train, you know, they cloister themselves away and they have like a monastic kind of preparation. I mean, that was the criticism of Fabio Capello when he was in charge of England in South Africa. You remember that the training camp that they had in Rustenburg in the middle of nowhere. And instead, you know, Mancini has wanted everyone to have fun, you know, train with music on, play lots of games. I mean, there's this crazy kind of variety show that they had on Rai, the state broadcaster, to announce the squad, which, you know, had, you know, Mancini and Daniele De Rossi, his assistant, playing sort of paddle, which is, you know, sort of table tennis, with a pair of frying pans. I mean, just all kinds of crazy things to keep morale going. And you can see that the positivity within the group, the fact that this, I think the other interesting thing is that you've got two Juventus players who are starting, Chiellini and Bonucci. You've got one Inter player in Nicola Barella in midfield. And you've got Donnarumma, who's now going to Paris Saint-Germain. The rest of the squad is guys who've, you know, really kind of played together, coming up from the under-15s at Italy level, you know, who've maybe played together at on loan at smaller clubs like Pescara and Insigne, Berati and Immobile's case. The other guys who played together for Sassuolo, Berardi and Locatelli, they all know each other inside out. They're mates. They're not rivals. And I think that that really makes the difference, along with the kind of style that they've been trusted to play.
Can I ask a little bit more about Mancini? Maybe I'm mistaken, but as far as I know, he was like a teenage sensation, so has largely been in the public eye and had a sense of responsibility from the time that he was 17 or 18. And is this current relationship that he has with the Italian public one of those relationships that comes about by virtue of the fact that you reach a certain point in maturity where everybody realizes that actually this guy's really special and we should have loved him a bit more over the years. We should have given him the same kind of currency as we would have given the great team of Viali and Baggio, even though Mancini was around at that time, was part of that trinity, but never actually had the same glory as them.
I think that's a really interesting point, because, you know, I mean, he was a prodigy, you know, when he came on the scene in the 80s, made his debut when he was 17. That was unheard of, really, at the time. Remember, you know, Italian football is quite famous for only trusting young players very late. You're young until you're about 27 in Italy. And you know, he, I think, was as talented as Baggio. I mean, you look at where Mancini won. He won at Sampdoria, who'd never won anything before. He won at Lazio, who hadn't won anything since the 70s. Even as a coach, he won things at Inter, who hadn't won anything for 18 years, at City for more than 40 years. Yeah, he is a winner. But I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, appreciation for him, not so much as a player, but as someone, a Hall of Famer, let's say, in the history of Italian football, because he had this kind of irascible kind of attitude where he would really flare up quite easily if you didn't play him, if you left him out, if he wasn't on the team, which was certainly the case with the national team. We did a long read on The Athletic about his kind of troubled relationship as a player, where, you know, I mean, he only played at Euro 88. He was a squad player at Italia 90, never got a minute. And this is his second chance, really, to get the kind of glory that he had with his club side, with the national side, which eluded him as a player. And, you know, I think that experience, the fact that he never got off the bench at Italia 90, he never got to play in front of the Notti Magica at the Olimpico, yeah, that's one of the reasons why you saw him make all those substitutions, all those changes against Wales. He wanted the guys in that squad to get the experience that he didn't have. And I think that second chance he's got, and the willingness he's giving to give opportunities to the players he's called up, just really kind of, again, plays into the enthusiasm, the excitement, and just the vibe around the national team.
Would Mancini, the player, have had a better chance of succeeding in the Mancini, the manager's team, than the team of Italia 90, for example?
Perhaps. I mean, he would definitely be the most talented player on the pitch. I mean, that just goes to show how talented that generation he was a part of was in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, it's one of the things that has played into why his predecessors are downplayed. The national team, I mean, he's got a bit of a new generation coming through, which has, but it doesn't have the kind of number 10 that you used to expect of Italy, or the great striker that you had of Italy. But, you know, I think he would have enjoyed it. I mean, it's curious. I mean, you know, in the from 92 to to 96. I mean, he did have the chance to play under Rita Stacchi, whose Milan's side were famous as one of the teams that changed the course of his football history with their pressing and that sort of thing. But Stacchi was very, very rigid and would often go with players who fit his system rather than the most talented players on the team. I mean, you remember from watching them as Ireland fans in at the World Cup in 94, his relationship with Roberto Baggio just was not good. So I don't know. I think the comparison, I suppose, with this Italy team is just maybe the one that Mancini broke into as a young player, the one that went to Euro 88, the one that went to Italia 90, which was a group of under 21 players who had success under one of the company men at the Italian Football Federation, is Elio Vicini, and they just had a freshness about them. I think you really see that freshness again in the Italy side. You just seem to be unburdened. Don't seem to be feeling pressure. Don't seem to be excited to be at a major tournament. Certainly after missing the World Cup and after, 18 months of not playing in front of fans.
Yeah, great to have you with us, James. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Pleasure, guys.
James Horncastle there. You can read his stuff in The Athletic, and of course you can watch him on BT Sport as well. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. We'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180. That's the WhatsApp number. Or, of course, you can leave a comment on the YouTube channel if you want to. What's your take on where Italy are at the moment, Owen?
Yeah, like we're moving right to the top of the pile alongside Belgium at the moment. I do think that you can take your pick with France, Portugal and Germany maybe as well in a tier just below that. But I guess when you look at early season form or early tournament form, you can only really blame the opposition so much considering some of the upsets that we've come close to seeing already. And Italy and Belgium have kind of shown a new gear whenever a question's been asked of them so far.
So your power rankings would be 5... Germany, 4.
Okay, let's go. See, I'm on a spot here now. So let's go 5 Germany. Let's go with 4 Portugal. Let's go with 3 Italy. Let's go with 2 France, and let's go with 1 Belgium. And right. I hope I haven't said the same team twice there.
You haven't, but you did put Germany behind Portugal, even though Germany just beat Portugal 4-2.
That's a good point. I did just do that, didn't I? Yeah.
You can flip them around
pretty,
if you want.
That's embarrassing.
I'll let you make that change. You can change that one. So it's Portugal 5, Germany 4.
Yeah, let's go with that. Let's go with a bit of recency bias. Nothing like it, because Portugal have never come back from a disappointing group stage result before to win the whole thing.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.